I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Later in the program, are some high-profile clergy living the good life and moving too far from the good book? And even if they are, is that the government's business? We'll talk about it in Faith Matters next. But first, our regular Friday political roundtable. Congress took up two tough issues this week, yet another attempt to keep a tax meant for the super rich from biting the middle class, the fight over the alternative minimum tax. They also tackled a bill giving gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals protection from discrimination in the workplace. And we also had the fallout for two administration officials involved in racial gaffes. Joining me in the studio to talk about all this, Congressman Arthur Davis, a Democrat from Alabama. And on the phone is Michael Steele, former Maryland Lieutenant Governor and currently chairman of GOPAC. It's a nonprofit that trains Republicans for state and local offices. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining me. It's great to have you both back on the program.
Michelle, good to be here.
Good to be with you, Michelle.
Congressman, if we could start with you. As our listeners know, Democrats and Republicans in Washington aren't agreeing on a whole lot these days, but both parties agree that something has to be done to fix the alternative minimum tax, or the AMT. So if you could just break it down briefly for us, why does this need fixing?
Well, 26 million Americans are set to become eligible for the AMT, frankly, in the course of the next year. We are looking at a significant tax increase for a large number of people if we don't take some step to do something about it. The Democratic caucus is committed to doing that. April 15th is not so far around the corner. And none of us, frankly, want to endorse an election year tax increase. So this ought to be an area of bipartisan agreement, in my opinion.
So what do the Democrats want to do?
Well, we want to fix
it. And then, Mr. Steele, I'll have you tell me what the Republicans don't agree with in a minute,
well,
Congressman.
The Ways and Means Committee wants to, one which I serve, wants to pass a one-year fix. The one-year fix would basically hold harmless 26 million American families who are due to start paying this tax. When the alternative minimum tax was introduced 20 years ago, frankly, it was meant to cover only very high-income Americans because it was not adjusted for inflation. It is now swept down and may cover people making as little as $42,000 a year.
Because it was never adjusted for inflation.
It was never adjusted for inflation. So large numbers of people, 26 million, again, making as low as $42,000, will start having to pay this tax if we don't fix it.
So, Mr. Steele, why do the Republicans have a problem with what the Democrats want to do here? Don't they agree that this needs to be fixed?
Well, absolutely. I mean, and the GOP has been saying, along with many members of the Democrat caucus as well, for a number of years, that this tax was an undue burden. It was kind of the surprise tax that most middle-class Americans kind of got when their accountants came back and said, oh, you need to pay this because. But I think what we're talking about right now is really a disagreement on exactly to what extent we're going to go about completely eliminating this tax, or are we talking about something that's just going to index it to inflation and therefore, again, continue to trap Americans as they earn more money. And, of course, you know, the definition of what is the middle class in this country is something that is continually under debate. But the administration doesn't believe at this point that it's appropriate, for us to go about trying to protect 21 or 26 million additional taxpayers from the tax, to impose a tax increase on them that they may still be there even if we make this small step to index it. So,
Mr. Davis?
Well, the irony, I appreciate the lieutenant governor, former lieutenant governor's viewpoint, but the irony is, frankly, the Bush administration has not been a leader on this issue. The Bush administration has talked about the AMT, but when the president sent up his budget resolution this year, the president relied on increased revenues from the AMT to move toward a balanced budget by 2012. So there's a real contradiction here. On one hand, the president talks about the importance of keeping the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts in place, but on the other hand, he has not seemed to be terribly aggressive about AMT relief, and I'm disappointed with a lot of my colleagues, frankly, on the Republican side of the Congress. They talk a lot about the 01 and the 03 tax cuts, but frankly, they indicate that they don't want to do an AMT fix unless Congress decides not to pay for it. We passed new rules this year that say that if we increase spending or if we cut taxes, we have to, like most American families, make some adjustment in our budget and find some way to generate new revenue or cut spending. So honestly, on this issue, which should be bipartisan in scope, For whatever reason, the Democratic caucus is much more proactive than the White House or the Republicans in Congress.
Mr. Steele, I just want to ask you, but isn't this the kind of thing that just makes most Americans crazy? Because Americans are about to pay a tax that they were never meant to pay. They're already counting the money in the budget, which hasn't even been collected yet. Everybody says this is not right, and yet the two sides can't get together. Isn't that stuff that makes people nuts?
It absolutely is, and I will definitely agree with the congressman. I absolutely agree with his assessment of the slow leadership on this issue. As I said at the beginning of my statement comments, that you know this is something that has certainly been talked about, and Republicans in previous Congresses have tried to act on in one form or another with members from the other side. And I'm not going to, you know, try to sugarcoat this. You're absolutely right. This is something that I think the administration could have effectively tied in with the budget tax, with the tax cuts that the president has been arguing that he wants to make permanent, and put together a comprehensive package to do that. And I agree with you. I think it's part of the frustration that many Americans have at this point that, you know, year after year we have these internecine battles within the GOP and the Democratic Party, and then they come to the House floor and they all kind of look at each other and start yelling and screaming, and then they go home for break. And I think the congressman has laid it out very clearly that at least there's something now on the table that we can begin to talk about. And we should begin to negotiate around exactly what type of tax relief we want to give the American people, irrespective of it being an election year, because, you know, you pay taxes every year. And the reality of it is, if we don't do something with it now, this tax is going to eat more and more of the wealth that many Americans are struggling to create.
Okay. Mr. Steele, I'll just stop you just for a second. Just say, if you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. In the studio with me today, Congressman Arthur Davis of Alabama on the phone, former Maryland Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele. He's a Republican activist. We wanted to talk a little bit about the bill to the passage of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Just very briefly, Congressman Davis, I just want to hear from you on this because Mr. Steele, sorry, you don't get a vote. Some people say that this is the— because there's one other issue we have to get to. But Congressman Davis, everybody says that this is a bill that would ban discrimination against gay men, lesbians, bisexuals in the workplace. Some people say this is the most important civil rights legislation to be passed since the Americans with Disabilities Act. Mm. But all the activists say is not going to go anywhere. So what was the point of bringing this up for a vote, particularly because many people in the gay and lesbian community don't support it, and they don't support it because they think it doesn't go far enough?
Well, I'm on the other side of the issue, and I think it goes a little bit too far. Certainly, government and public institutions should not discriminate because they collect taxes from all Americans. So congressional offices, federal offices, state offices should have a non-discrimination principle. However, if you have John Jones, who's a Southern Baptist in Alabama who owns a chain of Christian bookstores, and his religious beliefs lead him to have a particular opinion on homosexuality or on gay rights, John Jones, in my opinion, should not be covered by the same standard. The Boy Scouts, if you have a private organization which has its own particular defined view of the family and they choose to promote a traditional definition of family, the Boy Scouts ought to have a right to do that without being covered by federal law. So I think that non-discrimination principles are absolutely important and the right thing for public and government institutions. But I think the bill goes a little bit too far. In fact, it goes a big bit too far in sweeping into private organizations and small businesses.
So I think it does point out that the issue is unsettled on both the Democratic and the Republican side. Go ahead, Mr. Steele, very briefly.
It is, and I agree with the congressman's assessment of the problem with the bill, and I think that that's the key linchpin that needs to be addressed if you're going to get any movement on this issue.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple of gaffes here. John Tanner, the head of the Justice Department's Voting Rights Section of the Civil Rights Division, made some interesting comments about minority voters. He was talking about why he has no problem with a proposal to require voters to have a picture ID. A lot of minorities think that's discriminatory. This is what he said at the National Latino Congreso last month.
Because our society is such that minorities don't become elderly the way white people do. They die first. There are inequities in health care. There are a variety of inequities in this country.
Congressman Davis, you recently got a chance to question Mr. Tanner about these comments. Now, he said he was sorry. Does that do it for you?
Well, one of the points I would try to make about this, Michelle, is that sometimes in Washington we get caught up in this culture of, well, I said something I didn't mean to say. If anyone got offended, I'm sorry. The issue is not about hurt feelings, and I think Mr. Tanner may not fully appreciate that. The issue is that you have a senior policymaker, the senior policymaker in the Voting Rights Division, who made a decision about a voting rights, about a voter ID law, rather, in Georgia, and it appears that he based the decision on unfounded stereotypes and unfounded generalizations. That's the problem. And when I questioned and other members of the Judiciary Committee questioned Mr. Tanner last week, he never retreated from his conclusion. He believes that for whatever reason, because there's a lower life expectancy for minorities, that that is somehow relevant to the question of whether minorities have driver's licenses and whether elderly people have licenses.
He also made this comment about suggesting that people, that more black folks have IDs to go check cash.
Right.
So should he go? Just briefly, yes or no, should he go?
You know, honestly, I think he should go. Now, I doubt he will go, as this administration is not very quick to ever fire anybody. But I think it's very clear that John Tanner has not deeply thought through these issues. It's not about hurt feelings. It's about bad facts.
And finally, Mr. Steele, I have to ask you, you know, there was another incident that Julie Myers, the head of Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, she was forced to apologize about an issue pertaining to an employee's Halloween costume. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about this. There was a party where a white employee wore prison garb, dreadlocks, and dark makeup. She was part of a panel of judges who praised the costume for its originality. Now, you know, she's a top law enforcement officer. She's up for Senate confirmation. I have to, now, not to make you the spokesperson for all Republicans.
Well, thank you for that.
But you know, what does this suggest? Does you suggest that the Republicans just are all these boneheaded maneuvers just have a tin ear when it comes to people of color? What's up?
We have stepped in so much stuff over the last 6 years. You know, this is just one more pile that you walk into. And, you know, it's just, people just, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know how, I mean, you're in a position of responsibility and leadership in an organization who has accountability before the United States Congress. You think you'd know better. And, you know, it's just.
Should she go? Yes or no? Sorry. Should she go? Yes or no?
I can't make that judgment. I'm not going to make that judgment.
All right. So. I'm sorry. I have to leave it there. Sorry to cut you off. Former Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, Michael Steele, joined us on the phone. Congressman Arthur Davis was kind enough to join me here in the studio today. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for coming in and for a great discussion.
Thanks for having me.